Josh and Frankie.
What a couple of dumb shits.
Hello, primates! You found Primus Tracks. Congratulations! We're at Primus Tracks on Instagram and Twitter. PrimusTrackspod@gmail.com is the email address, as well as the PayPal address. And, of course, there is the Facebook page on which Frankie posts all kinds of weirdness around envelope filters. Speaking of Frankie, how's it going, Mr. Vandal?
Hi, Josh. How are you?
I'm a bit miffed, as some of our Instagram followers know, without telling me, Frankie posted an image of the envelope filter.
With some sparkly stuff.
Yes, and he made it look angelic, as though both of us here at Primus Tracks revere it to no end. As people chimed in, replying to the story, I had to tell them, Frankie hacked this account. I didn't do it, basically, is what I had to tell people. That was a good way to spend a Sunday morning. Well, today we're talking about Mary the Ice Cube. I would say, oh my gosh, we're already halfway through this release, but it's only five tracks, so I guess that stands. So, track three, Mary the Ice Cube, another departure. Just to speak of this track in general terms, we started with The Carpenter and Dainty Bride, which I suppose at this point is a top Primus track for a lot of people. You seem to have influenced quite a few people, Frankie. I don't know how you did that, because when I was going on and on singing the praises of Year of the Parrot, only like one or two weirdos spoke up. You are much more convincing, I suppose, and make a more compelling case. So Carpenter, pretty great Primus track, and then Pilcher Squad is a bit of a departure in itself, as we talked about last week. It's short, it's frenetic, it enjams a lot of lyrics, and Les is basically telling a historical tale as opposed to his own. This time, we're getting into new territory for Primus. A lot of people would call this the first Les Claypool love song. Where do you land on that, Frankie?
Yes. You know, it's pretty remarkable that they had never tackled the topic of love from this perspective, at right. least, you know, in such a relatively straightforward fashion. Mm-hmm. Now, I can see why he picked the ice imagery for the character, you know, to represent something that you cannot hold on to, even if you really want to. You know, it's perishable. It's bound to disappear. So it's a pretty cool analogy regarding the feelings of the narrator in the song. I would say, though, that, you know, it's interesting because with The Carpenter and The Dainty Bride, you have amazing lyrics, amazing music. With Pilcher, you have very interesting music, and you have another example of a really cool Les Claypool narrative. Mm-hmm. And in the case of Mary the Ice Cube, the lyrics don't particularly stand out so much for me, but I think the music is incredible, so it more than makes up for it.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, when I'm sitting here looking at the lyrics, they almost seem like a meditation on one thing. And a lot of poets will do that. Man, it's been a long time since I did my undergraduate poetry classes where we were analyzing certain authors. But those, there was one called 13 Meditations on a Crow or something like that, which essentially this poet was in a cabin watching a crow and came up with, decided to create 13 different ways of seeing this thing. And made a bunch of associations with it. So for me, this is like a meditation on the ice cube. And I do agree, it's a great way to represent. It's a great visual metaphor for the character and for what the narrator is going through.
But even more evocative is the bass line. It is really outstanding. Yeah.
Yes. I do think the music is really the showcase here, and the music itself is kind of meditative, so they work for me when they go together. So there are some parts that are fairly low-key and kind of just humming in the sense that I don't know that they're finding the euphoria frequency, because this is more about loss, but just finding that frequency on which they can sit and we can just ponder about this topic. So it's new in that sense too, because when we go back through the catalog, there's some groovy stuff, but this grooves in a very different way. And I called it the first Les Claypool love song. Frankie, I'm sure you, Trivia Maven, can name the second.
Iwan Gal, for sure, right?
Oh, it's got to be. That's what I have in my head. If somebody wants to, I suppose. And that one, of course, is about a life partner and a lifelong love. So it's much more upbeat and snappy, whereas this one is about love and loss, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Although, mm-hmm. You know, I do remember, maybe this was on Blame It on the Fish. Do you remember where Les was talking about how a friend of his, a physicist or a doctor friend of his, read these lyrics and applied it to his own dissolving marriage? Do you remember where that's from?
Vaguely.
Yeah, I remember him talking about these lyrics, and a friend of his glommed onto him and said, "This is just like the end of my relationship, man." I don't think the end of this person's relationship was the inspiration for these lyrics, more so than the lyrics came first. But it's really great because Les is hearing his close friends talk about these lyrics and their meaning to them, because this one especially, I went to song meanings, which is usually full of junk, but there were a lot of people ascribing a lot of different meanings to this track when we talk about the lyrics.
It's a deep one.
It can be. I guess it depends on where you land. You know, somebody commented, "I think it's about somebody who really misses their meth." Like, I don't know, man. Yeah. I thought it was about Gollum for a while. His precious. I don't think it's the meth one. I'll say that. So, well, we should talk about the music. We should talk about the lyrics. But let's go in order, Frankie. I know we've got a live history here.
Indeed, "Mary the Ice Cube" was performed for a grand total of 16 times between 2003 and 2004 during Tour de Fromage and Hell's Genetics. It never took off particularly as a jam vehicle. I mean, they did extend, you know, a little the introduction from time to time. They did explore some sections of the track a bit more than the studio recording, but it's fair to say that it was pretty close to what we have on the album. Surprisingly enough, out of all the songs on the album, only "Mary" kind of managed to do a crossover to other tours, because out of the blue, it was performed in Toronto at the Cool House venue in 2006 during the Beat a Dead Horse tour.
Ah.
But I do need to point out that this was an instrumental performance.
Full song, instrumental only?
Yeah, no vocals.
I don't remember that one. Do we know, was Les sick like a Davis in that one?
Could be. I would have to go back and listen to the full show to see what was happening, but it was an instrumental one for whatever reason. You know, he didn't do the vocals. And I recall that a few years later, Les mentioned that he wanted, or maybe he was considering rehearsing this song to bring it back for the live sets. As we know, that never came to be. So we don't know if it was just an idea and he forgot about it, or if they actually rehearsed it and they were not feeling it.
Right, that was mentioned in the Grapevine book.
Yeah.
In the afterword, if you want to call it that, at the very end. He mentioned that Herb was back in the band, said they were rehearsing tunes like Mary the Ice Cube in preparation for the upcoming tour. Yeah, never happened. That's a bummer. But we do know that Animals tracks are in their heads now and possibly on the horizon, which is encouraging. It would seem like this one might be the first one out of the chute, because I remember him being fairly proud of the bass line and the structure of this song. Did we get any teases after Beat a Dead Horse?
There was a tease in 2018, but that's about it.
Okay, so it's been floating around back there.
Yeah, Mary has lingered on, for sure.
That ice cube isn't fully melted yet.
I'm checking out the show right after a particularly long Nature Boy, you know, almost 14 minutes long. They just burst into instrumental Mary the Ice Cube. There's no explanation given. If any of our listeners attended this particular show, please shed some light for us on why Mary was performed instrumentally.
Which show was that again?
Cool House, Toronto, 2006.
there's your live history. I think I did not get to experience Mary the Ice Cube live, but never say die.
You never know.
It's just like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. How about that? All right, let's talk about the track itself. I'll cue up some portions of it, and we can discuss them. Frankie, how's that sound?
That sounds great. Let's start with that gorgeous intro.
Lots of great effects on the bass here, including that echo that Luca talked about with Carpenter, and then he modeled, of course, the Mary riff as well. Haunting is the word that comes to mind for me. Let's hear it. So right there when Larry hits that higher note, that was the end of the loop that played on the front page of PrimusSucks.com and the lead up to the release of this record. They played that was on a loop with the cover imagery. I would say in the late summer, early fall of '03, I would just put that on and let it go for long enough to annoy my roommates. It was great. I thought it was beautiful, and I thought, wow, this is different, and they're back. I had all the positive vibes going on, and what I really enjoyed about that, Frankie, and I think you, was this release had already been put forth, by the time you got, but this was the first one you picked up, correct?
No, I picked Punch Bowl and then this one just a week later.
I don't know if you had the pleasure of checking out the website and seeing that loop with the sculptures, because it just gave me an air of mystery, and I was just full of anticipation and really wanted to know what was coming. Boy, they did a great job teasing it. Haunting bass line. Larry doesn't do much, and then he's given those couple little accents there, and then Tim at the very end comes in with some light tom hits or something there, very light, and he takes it pretty easy throughout the whole thing, Tim does. So
yeah,
it's great.
And something very cool about that bass line is that it's just so inherently ominous. I mean, if someone told you this is a love song, and, you know, just before you listen to the lyrics, just by hearing that bass line, you know that something's going to be kind of off-center, right?
Right, yeah. And musically, it's not too weird. It's not too zany. It's actually fairly pentatonic. I'm not going to sit here and play it like I played my one note demo last time, but it's fairly straightforward as far as the tones he's using, but the effects with the delay, and so that layering on top of it, and then he hits a couple of half steps there that give that ominous feeling, I think, that you're talking about, because there's not a resolution per se throughout that loop. So that's really cool. That they know these things, right? These guys are pro musicians. They know how to put these things together. But it really does set the mood. I'll just play a few more seconds when we start to it from that intro, because this is what I'm talking about when I say I feel like it's meditative. Just this part right after that intro. So we're hanging out on a note, and we get Tim with that pattern. It's kind of droney. I think that they make a lot of space and a lot of atmosphere. I remember us talking about atmosphere big time on albums like Pork Soda and Punch Bowl, and they're doing it here too.
Let's fast forward to 52 seconds to hear a pretty cool bass part, you know, a fill.
And that stands out from this drone thing that they're doing here. So I think he's just hammering onto a note there, higher up on the neck. And this is the rainbow bass, correct? Because he's sliding all over the place.
It's a rainbow tune.
Okay.
100%.
Yeah, has to be, because when he's sliding around, you don't hear him going over any frets. The reason I ask that is because you can play this on a four string for the most part, I think. I know he has a fretless four, but I didn't know if he popped it up for this. But it makes sense that for this release, he was going rainbow heavy, because that was the Primus bass. You know, that was the one everybody recognizes.
Those are the kind of things that keep you going back to a song time and time again.
So they're highlighting some of these drone things, and I think you got a cool guitar thing coming up, right?
Yes. Something that I particularly enjoy about this song, you know, is that, well, Lur gets his spot, but prior to that, he peppers the track throughout with some really, really cool guitar parts. And there's particular effect that goes on throughout the head portions of the song that I really, really enjoy because it adds to that ominous feeling the entire song has.
I have to laud your word choice of peppering. I think that's a perfect description. Well, let's hear what it sounds like when he sprinkles it on.
That noise right there is amazing.
Doesn't nothing ever last forever?
Yeah.
Doesn't nothing ever last forever?
So he's given us a little melodic line there to counterbalance the percussive thing that Letts is doing during that chorus. Yeah, that sounds great. He's definitely laying on a little more distortion there. And we talked about that with Carpenter. They do that here where they start relatively clean, but start adding a little bit more and more dirtiness as they go to the crescendo near the end. Yeah. Seems like they're really big on this release, on establishing a mood and then building towards it and giving you a payoff. You know, for a guy like me, most of them are too short, but we get them at least. I wonder about this one, given that Larry doesn't do a ton. Now we get this part and he's playing around the edges as he often does, especially with the main bass line. But with the delay on that Les has, it does seem like there isn't a ton of space for Larry to do Larry things. I'm sure there are other guitarists out there that would have played a unison riff or harmonized with it and done some kind of maybe a crimson-y thing, you know, off into the background. But Larry also really knows how to pick and choose his spots, and I think that's one of his powers, magical powers.
It's really admirable because, I mean, if you look at it from both perspectives, either he has to come in after Les and Herb have laid down the track, and he's got to find a way to add on to what is already there, or, you know, he can contribute something from the beginning and then convince Les to build around that. In either scenario, I think it requires a lot of talent. Mm-hmm. And Lur always manages to hit the spot.
For the mood that they are going for, going minimalist seems to make perfect sense for much of the track. I can just imagine somebody coming in with a really, you know, really gymnastic riff on top, and it would probably sound cool, but I think we can all hear Les in our heads going, I don't know, it's a little fancy.
So. Yeah.
That's not what we're going for. Speaking of that guy's voice, we got a little vocal moment here that you're interested in.
Oh, yes. I'm also particularly fond of the way that Les was experimenting more with his vocals on this release. I mean, we have, you know, like this undecipherable mumbles in The Carpenter and the Dainty Bride. Right. We have a very poignant falsetto in My Friend Fats.
Yeah.
And there's also a bit of falsetto in Rapscallion. Right. And in the case of Mary the Ice Cube, we have these layers of vocals in different tones that instantly make me hark back to that really cool experimentation that he was doing with Miscellaneous Debris, particularly on Sinister Exaggerator. Mm. I love it when Les layers his vocals.
Oh, there is a link here, because if this is the part I'm thinking of, because with Exaggerator, you're absolutely right. I think my favorite part on that one is, as far as the vocals go, is that creaky, cause the gears of Elmer, but right, that one? Oh my gosh, so great. So, and there's a little bit of that here. So if this is the part I'm thinking of, and I'm crossing my fingers, Frankie. Oh, yeah.
She left me standing with tears on my face. I'm alone, so I wrote this song. Put it in last cube, where have you gone? Put it in last cube, where have you gone?
I'm not sure if he's using the Sandman mic there. I assume he is in the background. with that monotone, "Where have you gone?" He's, of course, EQing it, so it sounds like it's through a, you know, a muffled AM radio or something.
Yeah.
But I really love that in the background to give it more gravitas.
This song has got it all. You know, cool vocal effects, an awesome bass line, terrific lure, guitar parts.
Yeah, yeah.
No wonder it lingered on after Hallucinogenetics was over.
Right, and once again, it has all the hallmarks that we expect, but they are delivered in a unique and different way. So they're forging a new direction, even in the microcosm of the Primus world that we know of. So they're just finding those little bits and pieces that they hadn't messed with yet.
Oh yes, I was going to inquire if you consider. I mean, I think this is a really cool part. Do you consider it? It's lure land. Is it lure land material?
Remember postcards? Remember when somebody would travel somewhere and send you a postcard?
Yeah.
I don't know if people do that anymore, but the I would say this is like a postcard from Lurland. It's just a little bit of it, and it's somebody telling you about their experience in Lurland. It's not 100%. You have to be there for yourself to get the full experience, but I think this is somebody sending a postcard from Lurland and trying to communicate it in words. That's one of the dumbest things I ever said on this podcast. But let's see if it's true. Oh man, I could have just let that play because that's when Les comes in and stomps all over the place. But I would say that once again, that's like a Polaroid or a postcard from Lurland, especially leading up to that fire, that more fiery part or more distorted part. But it's just a little bit of what you could get. But I think he's showing that he knows what this track needs. As far as atmosphere. But once again, they're building, and there's some really cool stuff going on there. We might as well let it play to the end from there.
Yes, I want to listen to the coda in particular because, okay, there are a couple of things to highlight. First of all, amazing vocal part at the end. Mm-hmm. You know, it brings the song to the perfect closure. And the way that he sings that last verse is an excellent complement to what's going on musically at the same time. And also, you know, as a literary expert, Josh, I'm sure you will agree that ending the song with the question that he repeated throughout the track is masterful. It leaves you pondering that very same question. I mean, for the rest of the album, actually.
I will tell you, when I read a really effective piece of, usually fiction, that's how a good fiction writer leaves you. It could be a short story, it could be a novel. But when I finish a novel that I really enjoyed or was really engaged with, I read the last page and I read the last line, and I'll sit there and think about it. And because I don't want to leave that world because I probably have unanswered questions, or I just don't want to leave it because I want to know more of the experience. That device of asking the question at the end, while it may be somewhat elementary, it is still effective. You know what I mean? Like you can be really effective with the basics, rhetorical
yes.
basics and that sort of thing. And this is one of them, ending with a question. Make your audience think. It works so well here. It just seems like a no-brainer to do, but how many people would actually do it at the end of this track? So with their lyrics. So I'm glad he did it. Huge bass. I have to pause there to acknowledge the now classic Les Claypool call down with the bass. That was great. Second one on the record. And so here's that vocal part at the end. I think this is, it's kind of funny because to me it reads like a Greek chorus in the old Greek plays, where they would tell you the moral of the story, essentially, or what a character was going through, and say, this guy's feeling this way because he's jealous about blah, 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 whatever. The Greek chorus would pretty much tell you the moral of the story, because I guess the Greeks weren't very good at subtext. I don't know, but I guess here is this song's version of the Greek chorus. Cooler work, too. I just wish to find something to bond the love to touch so gently. Just nothing ever lasts forever. So he ends on that half step there. And once again, another unresolved bass note. A couple of things. I don't think he put any effects on the last line before doesn't nothing ever last forever, where I, you know, he says, I just wish to find something to fondle and to touch so gently. He's just doing that. That was an
amazing impersonation.
Thank you so much. That's probably my favorite vocal part of the tune because I love that sound. I love doing that stuff. It's dorky, but I like doing it.
Touch so gently.
It's great. And then he asks through that bullet mic, there's that question, doesn't nothing ever last forever? So that's what we're left to ponder on. I think it's smart to do that here and then have Rapscallion be the next track because it very slowly fades in. So you have enough think time for Mary the Ice Cube before the noise builds on Rapscallion, which I'm a fan of that too. We're even analyzing between track stuff, Frankie. Wow, we are so good at this. There's another thing. We haven't really touched on Herb's drumming too much. But I do want to go back
to... lots of fills. Some really cool ones in there. I'm assuming they are octobans.
It does sound like he's hitting those quite a bit, yes. And we're getting that distinctive sound. Did you notice, Frankie, in this track, he doesn't touch one cymbal?
That's true.
You would think, like, this is a part where he would hit a cymbal for a release of the tension. But he never does it. He doesn't touch a cymbal throughout the entire track.
Economy of cymbals.
That's right. He stuck to the skins this time. He didn't want to reach that far. So I do want to go back to that, essentially the mini Lurland postcard part, because that's where things build up and you can really hear. And you used the word, I think, tribal the other day for that specific
yes.
part for Carpenter. This kind of goes in that similar direction. And I think Tim really provides a great backbone for what's going on with the stringed instruments. Here's what I mean. Nothing ever lasts forever. Now she's gone. Nothing ever lasts forever. Now she's gone. Doesn't nothing ever last forever. So that part, he's hammering the quarter note again on the kick. But you're hearing these toms, and the mixing, by the way, is really nice. I'm just in stereo earbuds, but you can hear him ping-ponging back and forth or around the edges of things that boom, bap, boom, dum, boom. And he's doing some really cool stuff throughout. So providing a really, really great backbone for what those guys are doing. But he really isn't overdoing it. You know, he's holding back. And this is one thing that we've talked about with some people throughout the podcast, that when Herb came back in 2003, he dialed it back. He was not ripping like he did on those first 3-4 records. He really was going for those more low-key grooves.
And it works. It really complements the tracks.
Yeah, I mean, it's another way to approach the drums. It's another way to, you know, express musical ideas. And Tim has done all kinds of things throughout his years, so for him to bring that to Primus is great. I mean, I remember reading about Neil Peart, and I don't remember what time it was in his career. I think he'd be drumming for 20, 30 years with Rush. And he went to a drum teacher who tore him all the way down to being a beginning drummer and built him back up again through another lens. And Neil was willing to do that 20, 25 years into his Rush career, which is just mind-boggling. You know, we call him the professor. He's the master. But he went to somebody else to get another perspective. I don't think Tim did that to that degree, but he's bringing in all these other experiences when he comes back to Primus in 2003, and that's pretty rad. Okay, you want to talk more in depth on the lyrics, Frankie, because there is some there.
Okay, let's dive into those lyrics.
Okay.
First impressions, Josh.
First impressions, here we go. Once again, it's a visual metaphor, okay? I once had an ice cube, pretty little ice cube. Now it's gone. Okay, so mostly asking, where'd she go? She's gone with the others. I really like the vagueness of that line. She's gone with the others, the shiny little ice cubes. Moving on. And we do get that question, doesn't nothing ever last forever, a few times. I miss my ice cube, pretty little ice cube, since she's withdrawn. So this is, I think, where a lot of people will put the emphasis on a personal relationship, because when we think of ice, of course, the association that is that it's cold. And when somebody is being cold to you, they're being emotionally withholding, or in some cases, just straight up rude. You know, they won't engage you. So that idea that she's withdrawn matches the idea that the ice cube is cold. The opposite would be warm and inviting, you know, emotionally available. I'm still curious about this question, Frankie, here, this line. I held her in my hand, my chilly little ice cube. Was it wrong? Was it wrong? Never understood that part. Was I, like, as in I took her out of the freezer, I did something I shouldn't have? I'm curious about that.
Yeah, interesting observation. I think the narrator answers that question for himself with the conclusion at the end of the song. Yeah, okay. It's not wise to prize something too much.
Okay, so I loved her so much, I took her out of the freezer.
Exactly, and held her in his hand. I mean, right. His devotion was ultimately the downfall of his prized possession.
That makes sense to me. And because it was his own folly to a degree that caused this to happen. You know, she slipped away, my moist little ice cube, to oblivion. So she left me... So this part... How many times have we heard Les go meta and tell us that something happened, so I wrote this song? You know, I'm thinking of Fish On. He mentions as we finalize the song in Tweakers. So he says, she left me standing with tears on my face on the lawn, so I wrote this song. I feel like that line's a reach, and I don't know if it belongs here, but there it is. That's kind of a well you can go to, I suppose, and he does it more than once. Are you feeling me on that, or is it fine
for
you?
Yeah, I hadn't actually pondered that particular part, you know, because from your perspective, it's less going meta. From my perspective, it's not less. It's actually the narrator of the song, which is, you know, it could be anyone. It could be a character. And this is his song within the Primus universe, but it's not actually less. That's the interpretation that I have.
The first person I wrote the song is the narrator. Yes, I'm not saying it's Les Claypool, but this is a line that he'll use more than once throughout the years, getting a rhyme in there so he can say, so I wrote this song, or we're singing this song again, you know, like in Frizzle Fry, right? So there's a lot of instances where he goes to that kind of phraseology. And I don't know that it works as well here as it does in those previous iterations. And then there's more, you know, Pretty Little Ice Cube, Where Have You Gone? Doesn't nothing ever last forever? So that coda that we talked about, the Greek chorus part, it's been declared that it's not wise to prize something too much. That's the moral. So the meth guy on Song Meanings, it's right there. Okay, maybe you're prizing your meth, which is disturbing, but it's right there. And of course, it's an ice cube named Mary, so we can easily substitute a person in for the ice cube. The next line is what gets me. I just wish to find something to fondle and to touch so gently. This narrator is so into the idea of having something to prize that, of course, when he does it, it ends in disaster, at least with this ice cube and all the others before. So he either sucks at relationships because he romanticizes the other person, if we're going that road. Seems like he's really romanticizing the other person, or infantilizing the other person and holding them in their hand and just stroking them and treating them like a baby,
yeah.
You know, and not letting them be a person. And that, and I'm not a relationship expert, but that's getting into that weird territory of you become codependent and you don't give that other person any freedom to be their own person. And the relationship is what keeps you together because it's what you know, used to define you, and it gets weird that way. You know, this is getting into some interesting relationship psychology, actually, for me.
It's pretty interesting because we have never discussed such topics related to a Primus song up until now.
It seems like just yesterday I was learning about County Prune being, you know, some toilet drink that you make in prison. Yeah. So that's my Primus, man. But this also is a universal topic, and it's really great that we're getting one from Claypool that we can really dig into, because the way that we treat others and how we view our relationships, but also just that idea. And I'm holding, for those of you not watching at home, because good Lord, there's no reason we should put this on video. I'm just holding out the palm of my hand and I'm looking at an imaginary ice cube. There's just something about that that's kind of creepy, you know, especially given the musical content, that I'm just objectifying this thing or idolizing this thing, and I know it's not going to last. But at the same time, when I think about, Frankie, you probably know the famous quote attributed to Tennyson, it's better to have loved and lost than never have loved at all.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
You know, that experience of love is so, in that quote, is so important and so all-encompassing and consuming, and it's the greatest feeling you could ever have. So you might as well experience it, even though it's really going to fucking hurt when it ends. So... to put it colloquially for our 21st century listeners, this actually really brings up a lot of issues that one could hit on as far as this tune goes. But we get the question at the end, doesn't nothing ever last forever? I do think it works for the most part, and I think it pairs with the music really well. So I'm a fan of this one.
Me too. I think it's a really, really fantastic song. I tend to think about the Animals collection as a quirky short song and four epics. This is definitely an epic.
Hell, you can have an epic in 1 minute and 55 yeah. seconds if you want. But I can see that as a reasonable description of this collection of tracks. So this one has that epic feel to it, and I think it's got epic lyrical content. I think we should ask our listeners, Frankie, given that this is could be about lost love or could be about misguided affection, I suppose.
Yeah.
I would like to ask our listeners to send us your story as to how your love of Primus ruined your romantic relationship. That actually has happened to more than one person. And we'll read them on the air and eat ice cream and drink whiskey and feel bad for you. We can empathize.
If we focus on the last verse and mm-hmm. we take it out of the context of a romantic relationship and we apply it as a universal rule, you know, it's not wise to price something too much. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting to ponder how you could relate that to pretty much anything that you value in life. I mean, even Primus itself, you know, having this conversation reminded me about an anecdote I read a while ago about somebody who attended a VIP. And there was a person there that rolled up their sleeve and showed Liz a tattoo of him
that oh, yeah.
they had gotten on their arm. And, you know, it's pretty funny because the majority of the time, I think, when people see a tattoo of themselves on another person, I would imagine that the majority of them feel honored, right? Or maybe they feel flattered or something like that. But yeah. Liz said, like, why did you do something like that? I mean, you don't know if I'm going to do something terrible the next week or the next year. You know, I could really let you down. And you're going to be stuck with my face for the rest of your life.
Oh, man. I could see that being 50-50 as far as sincerity and joking. But yes, that is. I think that would freak me out. And I'm, of course, not a celebrity of any means. But it would be, I think it'd be strange if somebody had my face or likeness tattooed on them. To me, that's weird. I don't know that I'd go that far. Now, I have a Primus logo tattooed on me, but it's a Primus logo. It's not the face of one of those guys.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just so glad that the person just showed them a tattoo and didn't say, hey, can I fondle and touch you so gently? You know? No, that's a great point. I do take your point, Frankie, that this could apply to anything in life outside of relationships or people, prizing a person to the point that you dehumanize them. But just something to fondle and to touch so gently. I think we all want that to a degree, but it can become an obsession that becomes unhealthy after a while. So maybe that's the line, is getting somebody's face tattooed on your body. I don't know. Go out and get that tattoo, guys. It's all right. Take that picture of me from the promo and go for it. Put it right on your hip. I'd love to see it. Frankie can be on the other hip.
Yeah.
get that picture of Frankie smiling. Hey, we got some live cuts, Frankie. What are we dealing with today? In the queue, I have Minneapolis 2004.
Oh, my God. That show is so incredibly outstanding because of its rainbow power. Never had a show been so rainbow heavy prior or after Minneapolis. I don't know what happened that night, but it's just out of this world. Let's hear what Mary sounded like on an epic show back in 2004.
Peeking on that bullet mic. Oh, there's a cymbal. I think I heard Tim in the background again on vocals, kind of doing that drone voice. Man, a couple great things happening there. First of all, Tim's hitting some cymbals to release some tension there.
Was he hitting a crash and then muting it, or was he hitting a splash, you know, because he's very contained?
It is contained, so I would think it's a splash. It wasn't a huge one, and kind of stands to reason given the tune, but it's really great that he's hitting one. But then the sound on this Minneapolis soundboard is phenomenal. I mean,
that whole show is unbelievable.
We always talk about those Aught 3/4 soundboards. This one sounds really great, and I love how Les was peeking on the bullet mic there.
He was going for it.
Yeah. And then he got on the regular mic, and he was almost there on that one, too. He was really letting it rip on the voice. That sounded really good, and I think it gave that soundboard gives you more space to hear what Tim's doing, and it sounds pretty thunderous. I'm a fan of that one. I got to go back and listen to that Minneapolis show. It's been years.
Oh, you'll have a blast.
All right. Rainbow Bass Party at my place, everybody. Next, we have, this is a cut. Oh, next, guys, we have a cut from Frankie's Own, Fromage Selections. Now, you normally have to have a subscription to get this stuff, but Frankie is opening the vault just a tiny bit for you guys tonight. What do we have as far as this one, Frankie?
Let's see what this Mary sounds like.
He hit a sour note in there somewhere, but he's mostly staying with that shape. But that was some nice noodle in there, straight from the Fromage Selections. Once again, he's really going for it for the vocals, so this must be a favorite of his to just let loose.
Yeah, he's proud of that song.
It definitely shows, because he is not half-assing it, you know, like he does with all their other songs. JK! And it looks like our last cut for the evening with Mary the Ice Cube is from Orlando, Aught 4.
Oh, another cool show. I mean, it's not of epic proportions as Minneapolis or Seahawks, but it's a pretty solid show. Pretty solid tone, great set list. And if I'm not mistaken, we may get to hear the coda here, right?
Yes. We're going to hear somewhere in the middle, and then we're going to get the coda. Noodling. this extension. Well, we got the call down there, too.
They took the song to a pretty interesting place there, right?
Yeah. This is the longest cut of the three you sent, too. So this is over 6 minutes. So that was the addition there with the noodling.
They were exploring the territory there.
Yeah, it turned into a nice, cool jam there. Man, I like that one. Rain home. Listen to all those crashes now. Well, he puts a little something on that last note. Yeah.
But it fits.
Man, when he does that call down that like they do on the track and Tim hits every single note on it. Oh, man, that's machine gun stuff.
And what he was doing prior to the coda in the last heavy portion, I mean, he was kind of sliding, right?
On yeah.
The neck of the rainbow. That sounds terrific.
Yes, definitely gets that grungy, grimy, primacy sound from that bass. Man, I can't say enough about that. Those couple of tours there, they just were on the ball. They sounded fantastic. Thanks for those, Frankie. This is not one I would seek out to hear soundboard recordings of, but now I want to hear it.
I'm glad you enjoyed.
I did. And if you enjoyed it, send us money. No. Oh, hit us up on the socials, man. Tell us what you think about this track. Tell us about your awful, awful relationship breakup because you liked Primus too much or got less tattooed on your pectoral muscles or told your girlfriend, well, your hair's not as nice as Larry's and it was over. You know, whatever it might be.
If we can, Josh, if we can get people to reevaluate a song or discover a newfound appreciation for a song, then our job is done, right? It's a good day.
I think we did the job today. Here's what we'll do then. Mary, I'm going to put you back into the freezer because you've been tracked. Next time, Frankie, I know it's spring where we are, but we got to start thinking about our Thanksgiving meal.
Wow. Have mercy on it, Josh.
I'll try. All right, folks, thank you so much for tuning in. Woof, Mary the Ice Cube, we got deeper than I thought we would. At Primus Tracks, Instagram and Twitter, primustrackspod@gmail.com. Can't wait to hear your relationship horror stories. I don't know why I'm so into this idea. but there it is.
You're hungry for some gossip.
It's the dead of winter. I need something. Later days.
Willie Mays. I just wish to find something to fondle, but to touch so trippy. Just nothing ever lasts forever.